Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
It happened. It's over. It's Hot Sheet. It's Scotty Braun, J.J. Cooper, and Jeff Ponce from Baseball America. Please get yourself a BA subscription to the website, the email, newsletter, the whole deal, okay? And we appreciate you watching this show. We are following the trade deadline. So I'll throw right to you first, J.J., your thoughts on the trade deadline and how much it cost for certain starters and relievers.
Me. Jumps out to me. Oh, forgot first move. But the thing that does jump out to me, two things right off the top. What the Dodgers just did to get Jack Flaherty, when you look at the cost of starting pitching, kudos to the Dodgers. That was a low price. Tyron Lorenzo is a good prospect. I don't want to make it sound like it's not. But that was a lower price, I felt like, than others. And then the other thing that jumps out is we have been tracking this since 2014. First time we haven't seen a top 100 prospect traded at the deadline. Usually we see 3.5. We've seen as many as 11 over that time. But this year, no top 100 prospect in the BA top 100, unless there's some trade that someone's holding back. I don't think that's going to happen here.
Jeff, your thoughts? Let's start at the top here with the most recent, big trade at the buzzer with Jack Flaherty going to the Dodgers and the return on the other side for Detroit already in the chat. And I know it's pretty active today. We got one fan saying, please make me feel better about what the Tigers got.
Yeah. I mean, Therion Lorenzo is a really interesting bat, switch hitter with a ton of power. We saw some of it in the Futures game. Still pretty raw, I think, overall in terms of the hit tool, the ball skills, plate approach. But you look at Lorenzo, and it's a type of player where we could talk about this guy in a couple of years. I don't know if he sticks at catcher or not. I think that's probably the biggest question in the profile. But has the kind of power that could play, at first base, DH type of position. And we'll see how the catching goes. But, he was a guy that we came out of spring training. I know Josh Norris does a lot of work for us on the Dodger system, but also out in Arizona in the backfields and all the stuff that he sees. He was a guy that consistently was getting really good feedback from scouts. So, I do think there's a lot of stuff here to like and see him throwing right there. The arm's pretty good. Kind of your classic, hard-throwing catcher with power and maybe some questions about the hit tool. Sometimes these guys can, really develop into an above-average regular. So I think what you're hoping on, it is a bit of a lottery ticket, but it's definitely a high-upside one. You look at a player like Trey Sweeney, who was a smaller school guy coming out of the draft. He was a Yankees prospect, traded this offseason, has been with a couple of good hitting dev programs at this point. He's a really good athlete. I don't think they've necessarily gotten the most out of him. There's skills there. There's power. I think if you look at analytics just on its face without necessarily watching the player, you probably like Trey Sweeney a lot. He has the ability to play shortstop, third base, probably could play some second as well. So an interesting player for sure, and their skills there. But, you know, this was a pitcher, though it's probably the biggest name move at the deadline, the most impact arm. You know, it was a $14 million one-year challenge deal with Detroit. They're trying to get what they can. They got one top 100 adjacent type prospect. Lorenzo has actually been on our list at points this season. And then another guy in Trey Sweeney that's probably more in that like 250 to like 350 sort of range.
Oh, I'd go further than that. He's 28th on the Dodgers list. I mean, he's been traded for Jordan Vivas, and then he hasn't had a great year this year. And he's getting a little older now. Like, I mean, again, I don't want to dump on Sweeney in any way, but probably utility infielder. Like, if you look at that return and you compare it, Jeff, because I want to ask you, because you did the, you know, you do the Blue Jays, compare that to the Kikuchi return. Which one would you rather have?
Yeah, I think I'd rather have the Kikuchi return. I mean, you take a look at that trade, you're getting a pitcher in Blas that a year from now, we could look back and be like, this guy's better than Kikuchi is. And that's not a huge bar to necessarily overcome. Kikuchi had a really good 2023 season. He's been down a little bit more this season. There's been some luck that's factored into that as well. Really high batting average on balls in play, but he gets hit hard. I think that's what's consistent. He gives up a lot of home runs. That's not a great fit for Minute Maid. So, you know, I think that's kind of a question mark. I think on its face, and I've had some analysts with other teams, front office people saying this earlier today, that we're like, I wouldn't have traded Blas straight up for Kikuchi, let alone added in a player like La Perfido, who's major league ready. You know, there were some questions about the hit tool. He's a guy that's sort of always taken some time to settle in. There's big power there. There's sneaky athleticism. There's positional versatility. He's a guy that's played first base, second base, as well as some center field. And then, you know, you mix in Will Wagner, who probably had one of the better hit tools in the Houston system. He's kind of a classic Blue Jays sort of player in the mold of like Spencer Horowitz, where there's incredible plate approach. There's really good bat to ball skills. The power is somewhat there. It's kind of average to fringy raw, but he's not a guy that elevates a lot. But I think like in terms of a depth piece, he's probably not going to give you that much different production from what like a Justin Turner was giving you at 39 this year. So a nice sort of plug and play for them. They got three really close to the majors guys that could contribute this year, but definitely should be part of the picture next year. So I thought that was one of the bigger returns and was a little bit of a shocking return. You know, we wrote it up as Blas, and then I had sort of heard through the grapevine that, oh, there's two more hitters that are involved in this. And I figured it was going to be like lower level guys, maybe complex level guys, org type of players. And then it turns out to be two players that, you know, have performed really well in AAA over the last, you know, year plus.
Hey, JJ, one follow up back to Flaherty for a moment. The Tigers are saying this return is better than letting him go to free agency, giving him a qualifying offer, him saying no, getting $50 million bucks or more in free agency, and them getting a pick in the 30s, which is pretty high up. So did they accomplish their goal? You know, yeah, would you rather have this return or the 35th pick in the draft next year?
Okay, I feel like that's a false duality, though, because yes, I would rather have Lorenzo than that. But I would rather have – now, again, maybe we're just wrong. Maybe we're misguided in thinking that teams would prefer Flaherty to Kikuchi, that teams would prefer – you know, again, I don't want to compare Trevor Rogers, who went to the Orioles, because he's got 2.5 years of team control left. We're talking about Reynolds here. But, you know, maybe the Astros-Blue Jays trade kind of ruined it for him. But the problem I have is I'm looking at this and I'm comparing and I'm saying – I'd rather have what the Astros got. I mean, gave up. I'd rather what the Blue Jays got. And yes, you can say maybe it's better than that. It's better than that pick. But that's not the only thing we're talking about here. We're talking about a trade deadline where the cost of starting pitching for mid to back of the rotation starting pitching was really pretty high. And you look at it now and you say, yeah, I just kind of thought there would have been another piece in there.
Yep. Well, what about what the Marlins return looked like, Jeff? Because they did a lot. It was tough to keep up with Peter Bendix just, you know, taking the poster of the 2024 Marlins and just ripping it in his office and just completely redoing this franchise over the past, you know, few months, obviously, because you go back to the Arise trade after giving up a month into the season. But what do you think of what they just did, highlighted by the trade with Tanner Scott going to the San Diego Padres?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it feels as if this is kind of par for the course with the Marlins at this point over the last, whatever, 5 to 6 years. Just kind of tearing down, trading away good players. The amount of good players that they've traded away in all these deals, I think, is kind of interesting. For me, I think the big highlights here are Augustin Ramirez, who I think you could make a case is maybe a top 100 snub. There's some questions about the actual catching. The arm is really good. In terms of a bat, this guy could move to first base or be a DH. I mean, he kind of hits all the qualifiers. It's good approach. His bat to ball skills are plus, and the power is huge. He was hitting as a, you know, young for level at a higher level in the minors in Double A. I think he's probably, you can argue, probably the best prospect that's been moved at the deadline. Connor Norby's a guy that, you know, they've been collecting second basemen for years, and this is probably the most well-rounded second baseman that they've collected thus far. Guy that should slot in to Miami's, you know, lineup almost immediately and finally get some run. I know JJ kind of off air earlier had mentioned that, you know, with a guy like Norby and another guy like Stowers, they were kind of reaching their shelf life in terms of being valuable prospects. It was a good move by the Orioles. I think it was probably good for both teams. You know, as far as the pitchers that they acquired from the Padres in the Tanner Scott deal, I don't love Robbie Snelling. I think a lot of the concerns that we heard from analysts and opposing scouts last year that were lower on Snelling, despite the really good performance. I mean, he was the Baseball America 2023 Minor League Pitcher of the Year, just to put that out there. He's really struggled in San Antonio this year. He struggled to miss bats. He struggled to throw strikes. His stuff isn't that good. I mean, his fastball sits 91 to 93 miles an hour with dead zone shape. It's a pretty good breaking ball, but it's a softer breaking ball without a ton of break. And if the pitchability traits have backed up a little bit, he's kind of a maxed out guy too. I don't know how much more they can sort of get from this body. That being said, the Marlins have, you know, to their credit, been a fairly good pitching development house over the last, you know, 5 to 6, 7 years. So I understand what they're doing here. I think Mazur, you know, a major league ready pitcher who, the 8 or 9 starts that he made in the majors are not necessarily indicative of who he had been in the upper minors. A guy that showed a lot of control, did not show much command or control in the major leagues. He's got an interesting pitch mix. He throws a little bit harder. It's not a ton of ride, but it's like a cut ride fastball. He's got a really good gyro slider that he throws pretty hard. I think he's an interesting pitcher and a guy that, you know, potentially with some more work on the changeup could develop into a pretty good starter. It wouldn't shock me if we look back in a year and we say that, you know, the better get between Mazur and Snelling was actually Mazur. But you never want to write off a player that's as young as Snelling that was as productive as he was right out of the draft.
The thing that jumps out to me, you flashed up that graphic, which was awesome. You see all these players here. And the other thing that jumps out to me is the Marlins did get a whole lot of guys who they can kind of just plug in now, right? Like now or by latest next year. Ramirez, hopefully can catch. Norby at second base. De Los Santos, who, by the way, I mean, there's a lot of questions about the contact ability, the approach, but this is 30-plus home run power if it all, you know, clicks. Graham Pauly could be up in the big leagues now. And when we talk about the pitchers, like Mazur, they could just plug into the rotation. This is a team that added a lot of, you know, some further away that are a little bit more kind of fringy guys, but a lot of guys who Kyle Stowers, just plug them in your lineup. There's a lot of guys that they added who you could say, okay, this is your new look Marlins starting right now. That doesn't mean that they're going to be necessarily a whole lot of good right now, but they weren't very good before. So this is at least kind of turning a page and we'll see kind of where this goes. The key thing for them now is this was a farm system that was pretty thin. It's obviously gotten a little bit better, a lot better, but there was a downside to this. You trade for 15 prospects, 19 if you count the Arias deal, 19 prospects, 40-man roster decisions are going to become a little bit more complicated coming up because some of these guys, they're not going to put on the 40. That kind of tells you something about them. But they have some 40-man roster decisions to make. They're going to have a lot of kind of further work to do, but they obviously did kind of transform this team over the last month.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. We mean it. We have a college baseball writer opening at Baseball America right now. And where are we posting it? Indeed. Because Indeed makes hiring easy, and it gives us great candidates. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses, including Baseball America, worldwide, that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to improve any dog's health: their food. What she's discovered is that the way that many dog foods are made can actually create toxins that can be wrecking your dog's health. And this is true from even many premium brands. Fortunately, she's found that just by adding a few special superfoods to her dog's food, she saw huge transformations in their health. She's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone could do the same thing to see incredible changes to their dog's health. I've got two dogs, and I want them to be with me for a very long time. There's a lot of good stuff here that made me think about how most dog foods are made, what to avoid for my dogs, and superfoods that are great for them. If you want to keep your dog healthy and happy, go to badlandsfood.com/baseball and watch Catherine's video right now. Again, that's badlandsfood.com/baseball. I don't know about you, but I love fall. Fall is a time where the weather just feels perfect from the start of the day to the end. It's a great time for me to get on a bike, take a good long ride where it's nice and crisp, not cold, but crisp. And it's time for new fall traditions, like getting regular hydration and energy from Liquid IV. Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier Plus Energy delivers 100 milligrams of natural caffeine plus 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, so you can accomplish all the things you want and need to do. And they've combined their popular peach flavor with the highly requested blackberry to awaken your senses and keep you coming back for more. Liquid IV makes my workouts more enjoyable. It's really easy to prep. I just take my water bottle, fill it with water, some ice, pour in the Liquid IV, stir it up. It's ready to go. It gives me better hydration than I would if I was just using water. It's something that just makes those bike rides even more enjoyable than they were before. Hydration Multiplier Plus Energy delivers energy comparable to 1 to 2 cups of coffee through about 100 milligrams of naturally occurring caffeine. Experience the deliciousness of one of our best-selling flavors, peach, perfectly paired with the highly requested blackberry. It's an all-in-one formula that provides mind and body energy plus hydration that leaves you feeling focused, alert, and ready to take on anything. Tear, pour, live more. One stick and 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone. Powered by Live Hydroscience, an optimized ratio of electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients that turn ordinary water into extraordinary hydration. 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink. 8 essential vitamins and nutrients. Always non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, and soy-free. Start a new fall tradition with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code BA2022 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code BA2022 at liquidiv.com.
Yeah, and then you've got the Rays in a similar category for how they operate. They just, you know, win more consistently recently than the Marlins do, but you end up seeing, you know, a similar script with them every few years, or really even every year when a guy gets to a certain point that, you know, costs too much, they let him go. Usually 2 or 3 years left to go of control. So let's go there next. Jeff, the returns that you've seen for Tampa Bay, they weren't as active, obviously, on the last day here on trade deadline day, but they were kind of leading the charge early on
in, you know, trade season over the past week. Do you think they did well? And if you can, please definitely include that Isak Paredes deal and how you think that's going to play out for them.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I think, like, I tried to do some digging on what the logic was on the Isak Paredes deal, because I think if you've watched Morel, you've watched Paredes. Paredes has been the more productive player. He's been the better defender at third base than Morel. Morel is super tooled up. I think there's a lot of ability there. If you're a fan of the Cubs, he's probably, you know, one of your sort of fan favorites because he can do so much that's so exciting on a baseball field. But it's a matter of sort of honing those baseball skills. So it'll be interesting to see sort of how they view that. I think the couple of relievers that they got back in that Paredes deal as well could turn into, you know, some bullpen dragons, which the Rays have, I'm getting my Florida teams mixed up. The Rays have been, you know, notorious for, and they do have some big stuff in both of those guys. The names that I look at that I'm most excited about when I look at this return, they got some big athletes and some outliers. Guys like Brody Hopkins. Brody Hopkins was the best testing athlete in terms of jump testing, in terms of force plate testing in the Mariners organization last year after Darren Bowen was traded. He's super projectable. He was a two-way guy at College of Charleston and then at Winthrop when he transferred. Now full-time pitcher. I think, like, talking to some analysts, talking to some people around the game, you know, I've heard there's an opportunity for four more above average pitches. There's really nasty stuff there. Aiden Smith is a player that I really, really like. I think that he's maybe a little bit underrated. I think he's arguably top 100 adjacent. When you look at the skills, he's a plus runner. He can play center field. You know, there's some power there. There's some plate skills, a little bit of swing and miss, but mostly in the zone. The swing decisions are good for sort of age and level. And he's a guy that elevates the ball consistently. I think I put this into the trade write-up, but, you know, 60%+ line drive plus fly ball rate. He puts the ball in the air a lot. I think he's a really exciting player. Could be a better version of, like, what Johnny DeLuca is. I think there's a lot of similarities there, but the tools are probably even louder than what DeLuca's are. And there's obviously a lot more runway to develop this guy. And then Matthew Etzel, I think, was sort of an underrated player, you know, within the Orioles organization. Probably more of a 45, but I do think there's some 50, maybe even 55 ceiling. If you really max some things out, there's some power. He's another good athlete. Another guy with decent plate skills and kind of a grinder type too. So, you know, I really think that what they captured overall, they targeted athletes, they targeted really good dev projects. And it's just kind of typical of the Rays to go out there and, you know, find some good players for guys that, you know, maybe they wanted to move on from or had expiring contracts.
The other thing I think is notable with this is it hadn't happened yet, but I'm expecting we're going to see Junior Caballero come up before too long. We're going to see Curtis Meade back in the big leagues. They had some guys at AAA who make a whole lot of sense to kind of say, okay, now it's your time. The key thing of all of this is if Caminero steps in and is what we think Junior Caminero can be, that's a big boost. We've seen Taj Bradley kind of take that step forward, especially in the last couple of months, and kind of become one of the front, you know, the rotation guys. For them, we got Shane Boz, the Rays got back. So there's a lot of kind of like, yeah, but I didn't really understand the Paredes trade, to be honest. I still don't understand the Paredes trade. I think the Cubs did really well there. I know that there's some skepticism about how Isak Paredes' approach is going to age, how it's going to work, taking him out of Tropicana. But at the same time, he's just a better player than Christopher Morel, and I don't think that the rest of the return they got back makes up for that. I thought Paredes was one of the better players who's gotten moved at the deadline. I will say this is the Rays. They've made a lot of these moves look really smart over the years. They often generally know, have a pretty good idea of what they're doing. But that's one that I really like for the Cubs, because I feel like the Cubs got better for this year and the future in that trade, because I think they just got the best player in the deal.
Yeah, I'm with you. That was a shocker to me. It's almost like, you know, the Rays fall in love with a certain type, then they kind of convert him into that type of player, which was Paredes, right? And then it's like a couple seasons, and then they're like, okay, now we don't like him anymore. It's like this is like the model player, right? That they were able to tap into from Detroit, and then he's gone. Poof.
But I won't say that they don't like him anymore, but everything with the Rays also is your production versus your cost. And sure, he's getting more expensive. And so what do they do? Okay, you know, time to move on. That is the Rays way. The Rays are a team that is always having to compete. I know they just got another big step, I think, on their new stadium today, but they're always having to compete on one of the smallest payrolls in baseball. And so they have very much, it's kind of a rough if you are a Rays fan and you grow attached to a Randy Arozarena or an Isaac Paredes, or, you know, we just go down the list. Whoever you are as a Ray, you know, you're always just you're the current Ray, and then you might be moved for the next Ray. But it also has really worked for them, obviously, over the years as well.
JJ, is there a team that you liked on the trade side, on the return side, prospect side, that we should point out? I'll throw a team out there, and you can either react mm-hmm. to that one or throw one out yourself. I felt like there was some positive vibes from the Phillies acquiring Carlos Estevez and giving up two, you know, pretty good-looking pitching prospects that have had good years on the Angels side. And, man, they better work out, because the Angels have tried a lot of different tactics to get good pitching and develop it, and it hasn't worked. And then they did not capitalize on this deadline with their longer-term players.
I mean, the Phillies, you know, then also it's kind of interesting. They kind of did a little bit of both, because then I think they've gotten a little tired of Soto, so they swapped Soto for Seth Johnson in a deal with the Orioles. I can't not start on the negative here, what you just brought up. I don't understand what the Angels are doing. I don't understand how the Angels, this is the much better version, at least than last year, because last year was the worst possible version of it, which is we're going to hold on to Shohei Ohtani. So we got almost nothing for Shohei Ohtani. We talk about the trade of Flaherty, like a qualifying offer for Flaherty. Yes, the return, if you had traded Ohtani at the deadline last year compared to the pick, is not even a comparison. But so they did that. But worse than that, they last year went out and acquired Giolito and Lopez, gave up two of their best prospects in a thin farm system, and then basically dumped them after the deadline, just please take their salaries. We're begging you for the Guardians. They didn't do that bad this year, but you do look at it and you say, there are a number of players here that I can't explain unless we've missed the deal, you know, that happened and while we're on the air. But Tyler Anderson, Luis Renifo, like, why are these guys still Angels? Taylor Ward, why are these guys Angels?
Yeah, I think when you look at the Angels system as well, it's one of the thinnest systems in the game. You know, after a handful of players at the top, and they're constantly pushing those guys up to the majors as fast as they possibly can, there's not a lot of depth. You know, there's not even guys that, I mean, I would argue that there's probably a lot of players on that list that are org guys. You know, it's one of the shallower systems in the league. They haven't been a great drafting team. They haven't been a great development team. Optimizing at the trade deadline and maybe getting some backfill pieces from another organization, I think would have been huge. And I think on Saturday, when you saw, like, all right, they traded Estevez, they get back a really nice piece in Klassen, they get a really nice piece in the left-hander, Aldejeri, who have both shown upside this season and been some of the better performing pitching prospects in, you know, each of their respective leagues. You're kind of like, all right, like, that's a good start. But after that, you know, Rengifo was a guy that had a lot of smoke around him for the last 2 weeks of potentially getting moved. He doesn't get moved to a contender. Tyler Anderson, especially in this pitching market, you would think that Tyler Anderson, regardless of contract status, you know, would potentially return some decent pieces. We go back to that, you know, Kikuchi deal and just what they got, or, you know, Flaherty obviously is a much more productive player, but they weren't able to sort of capitalize on a market that was sort of ripe for the picking. And I think that's a major mess up on the part of the Angels, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm interacting a little bit in our live chat right now in YouTube. You know, Andrew said, you said nobody in the top 100 was traded. Why would you trade Renifo, Tim Anderson, or Ward for guys with massive red flags, while people also say the team can't develop? Well, you got to develop some players. That's part of the problem. You got to buy into that eventually. And they have. I mean, kind of on the fly in the big leagues, with someone like Neto, of course, would be brought up as a great example. But you have to have a farm system if you're the Angels. You have to, and it's been a problem. And I'm fine with Ward. He hasn't hit lately. He's got more years of control. Renifo and Tyler Anderson both have 1 year left after this. Those are must trades in my mind.
Well, especially those probably also aren't guys that you're even going to tender. You know, like the offer, you're not going to probably get a qualifying offer on Renhifo. I don't, maybe they would. I don't expect that they would. So I think this kind of all comes back to, there's been this kind of continual belief, I would say mainly among Angels ownership over the last 10 years plus, that next year's the year, this year's the year, next year's the year, this year's the year. And there needs to be some longer term thinking. I mean, again, I'm not one to say there are teams that absolutely maybe, you know, tear it down a little bit too frequently or are a little bit too willing to, because obviously you can save some money doing that. But this is a team that hasn't had any playoff success in the entirety of Mike Trout's career. And Mike Trout, unfortunately, the best years for him are behind him now. I hope he still has many more good years to come, but Shohei Ohtani's gone, and that this team's not really positioned to get better next year. And I just look at the deadline. This is the deadline. The deadline's now gone, and there are players that are going to stay Angels on a team that needs depth. I mean, one of the biggest problems the Angels have had, you've seen it this year, the Angels have more that guy's still in the big leagues players playing on their roster than pretty much anyone. And they could have helped that a little bit. Like, you look at, again, if you just contrast it, you look at what the Marlins did. I'm not telling you that these 15, 19 prospects the Marlins got, all of them are going to hit. But I am going to tell you that some of them will, and they've given themselves kind of a little bit of a runway for 25 and 26.
Any other trade returns that you want to either break down that you really liked, didn't like? I know you had one, JJ, related to the Pirates, right? I mean, the Pirates get Isaiah Conner-Falefa and they pick up Brian De La Cruz. What happened there?
I like this trade. Like, I like what the Blue Jays did with a lot of these moves, but I thought that the Blue Jays-Pirates trade here made a lot of sense for both teams. You get IKF, who can play anywhere, and the Pirates, if you watch, the Pirates are, to me, one of the more watchable MLB TV big inning moments kind of game teams, because they're going to have Skeens on the mound a lot. You know, they're going to have O'Neill Cruz doing crazy things, but you also notice there's not a lot of runs scored in those games. They have really good pitching, I feel like, a lot of times, and kind of gets kind of squandered. IKF kind of helps that, because, you know, kind of for life can play pretty much anywhere. So wherever you need him tonight, he can play. He can give them a solid defense as well. But I look at the Blue Jays, Charles McAdoo, he's been a really kind of a breakout prospect this year. Number 12 on our most recently updated Pirates top 30, a guy who kind of set the world on fire at Greensboro this year and has been fine since he got moved up to AA Altoona as well. Third baseman, corner outfielder. We'll see where he plays end up defensively. But I just thought that was an astute pickup for a Blue Jays system that, Jeff, again, you do the Blue Jays, I feel like has gotten a good bit better over the last couple of days, which they needed it too.
Yeah, and I think, like, if you look at that system, it's been a lot of closer to the majors type of guys that could be productive in a short window. McAdoo, I think, has been, you know, a huge win for the Pirates, obviously, just in terms of getting this guy in the 13th round last year, signing him for $150,000. And I think, you know, we've seen there's more in the tank. Even as he's moved up to double A, he's hit 269, 347, 490. That's a 134 WRC+. There's enough contact there. You know, it's average or better. The approach is average or better. There's good power and there's good, you know, underlying power metrics in terms of like quality of contact and that sort of thing. He's questionable as a defender as to like where he's going to fit in long-term necessarily. But whether that's left field, third base, maybe he plays a little bit of both. I think it's an interesting bat, and you know, they didn't land any like huge top of the system players. Blas is probably the closest to that, followed by La Perfido. But I think you look that they kind of backfilled this system, and they went from a bottom five system in the game with a ton of injuries to their top players and then a PED suspension for Elvis Martinez to a team that has, you know, pretty good prospect depth, though maybe not the high end names that, you know, you would have wanted to see maybe if they had moved to Bassett. And of course the rumors around Vlad and Bo Bichette. But I think, you know, if you look at this team, they had a lot of bad luck. They were able to backfill with some close to the majors guys that could help them, which has really been a consistent issue for the Blue Jays over the last couple of years. After that sort of golden generation of players that came up in the system, they've been aggressive in free agency. They've tried to go out and improve this team. They still have some pieces, and it's a team that I think very quickly, with a couple of signings, a couple of trades, could be back in the mix in the AL East next year, which is obviously one of the most competitive, tough divisions in the game to win it.
There's Knob. I thought the Pirates would do more. They were linked to Yandy Diaz and some other bats. Yeah, but I think the Yankees were interested in Yandy Diaz. I think the Astros were definitely interested in Yandy Diaz. Maybe even the Mariners. I guess maybe before the Justin Turner acquisition, but the Rays didn't trade him. They decided to keep, you know, a couple familiar faces. But anyway, JJ, you got a final thought for us before we get out of here?
One other team is coming in. This is not one of the big movers of the day, but I did notice that, like, over the last couple of days, like what the Royals have done. I think we kind of do need to acknowledge the Royals are legitimately in this. This is a team that's not like hovering on the very fringes of the playoff race. This is a team that has one of the three best players in baseball right now, and Bobby Witt Jr., who's kind of taking the team, putting it on its back. But then I feel like they did need relief help, and I kind of like, between the Lorenzen move, between the Urcic move, Hunter Harvey does look like, you hope he's not too hurt, but I just like the fact that they kind of made some moves and didn't really give up a ton to get that. So I just thought that that was a team that's kind of more on the periphery of all this that I did think improved. The other one that just jumps out is we'll see what – I felt like the Nationals got a lot back for Lane Thomas. Again, Nationals are still a little ways away, but I really liked – that was another one of the moves that really jumped out to me that I really liked for a team.
Yeah, I know you put together rankings for every player that has gotten moved during this trade deadline period. So everyone make sure you check that out on Baseball America. Get yourself a subscription. Please subscribe to this YouTube channel as well. Like this video. Comment on some of your favorites and least favorites involved during this trade season. Can't trade for major league players. If they play in the bigs this year, that's it. It's done, okay? But we're here every single week. Tuesdays, 3 o'clock Eastern time. We're live, or check it out afterwards wherever you get your pods or on YouTube. JJ, Jeff, great work today. Thanks, everyone, for watching and listening. And we will see you next week on Tuesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.